to remind everybody that this is being recorded and that we will take questions from the live audience as well as questions that are submitted by those participating by webinar. Those on the webinar can use the question button to ask questions that we will go through at the end of the presentation. We usually open our meetings with a safety moment, and tonight is no different. If we'd like everybody to take a moment and look around, if you have any kind of emergency in your room here at TVA, we would escort you out the store and downstairs if it's a weather event, or behind you outside onto the plaza. So everybody online, if you look around and decide what's your best area of exit, that would be great. Also, it's been a hot and muggy day here in Knoxville, and we know a lot of people are out heading to the water to cool off. So our two big recommendations is to use plenty of sunscreen and drink plenty of fluids, and we'd like a lot of that fluid to be water. Gary, would you like to begin our presentation tonight?
So, again, as Joe said, welcome. Thank you all for coming. Those of you on the phone, we are going to be handing out 3D glasses here in the room later for a certain part of this, so y'all will just have to imagine what it looks like without them. Tonight we are going to talk, again, Kathy's already done this slide, I think, but just as a reminder, it is a webinar, and right now all those participants are in listen-only mode. We will take those alternating questions as we go. So here's what we want to do tonight. Joe's already given us our welcome, so we have a handful of things that we want to cover, and I've got to remember I have to stand closer to this thing. That's going to drive me crazy. So the people on the phone can hear me. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about the schedule first, kind of where are we and what's left in terms of just overall schedule. And then what we want to do is give you an update. As Joe's already said, we've been doing a lot of hard work within our teams here at TVA to get ready to actually start the modeling exercise. And so I want to step us through and talk a little bit about scenarios again, kind of recap those. That's really that was the primary topic of our last public briefing. Then we want to talk a little bit about the strategies and what we're going to use in that space, give you just a little idea about what our set of options, resource options, actually is going to look like now for the model. Talk a little bit about metrics and the scorecard. That's actually the work that we are actively engaged in right now with our stakeholder group. And then talk a little bit about next steps, kind of where we're going from here. Okay. So before we start that, though, I want to remind everybody what we're doing. You know, resource planning is kind of like solving a puzzle. At TVA, we solve that puzzle in a way that we call least regrets planning. That is, we're looking for using a scenario analysis kind of framework. We're trying to make sure that we can identify a plausible set of futures that TVA might face. And then what we do is analyze our best business plan, if you will, in all those alternative futures, roll that analysis up into a recommendation that we make ultimately to the board about the direction for TVA's resource planning. That's kind of least regrets planning because we're trying to look at the uncertainty both of the way the future is going to turn out and also the uncertainty about all the assumptions that make up that future, like how much load are we actually going to serve, what is the price of natural gas, all those things. So that least regrets process is intended to help us effectively achieve our mission here at TVA. And you kind of see our primary missions kind of in the middle of that screen. We are low cost and reliable power, and we have an environmental stewardship obligation as well as an obligation around economic development in the valley. So we intend this least regrets process to help us position ourselves so that we can, in fact, achieve all the pieces of that mission. While we're doing that, we have to still remember that at the end of the day, whatever we recommend as our preferred plan and carry forward to the board is going to have to still have kind of these three big sort of characteristics. It's really going to have to be lowest cost because that's kind of fundamental to our mission. Everything that we do is centered around trying to keep costs to our customers as low as they can be. But we have to be reliable, and especially as you see as we begin to talk a little more about the scenarios that we're looking at and the kind of options that we might be thinking of in terms of business plans, you can see that reliability begins to mean different things now as there's kind of a paradigm shift sort of going on in the electric utility business right now in terms of who's providing the power and who's using the power. So we have to keep that in mind as we go forward and make sure that our reliability target works even as our alternative futures are kind of changing. And then the last part of our fundamentals here around the resource plan is about the portfolio mix. We want to make sure that we have a good, diverse, balanced kind of a portfolio so that we react well to all of those uncertainties that I just talked about before, both different kinds of futures as well as the uncertainty around all those key assumptions. So that kind of three-part thing is going on inside all of that other analysis I just talked about, and we're going to look at the pieces of that now in just a minute. So what about our schedule? Well, I can tell you the team is really excited that this picture has two chevrons that are grayed out now. So we've made it through two of these phases fairly effectively. We are actually in that third one, in that sort of purple colored one right now. We're just buttoning up the work on setting the framework and getting all our assumptions together. And in fact, we finish up meetings with our stakeholder group later this week. We'll be essentially complete on that phase and ready to start the actual analysis that you see there for the summer of this year. Essentially, we're going to spend most of the summer running our analytics and developing our draft reports. Assuming everything stays on schedule, those draft reports, both the IRP's report as well as our draft of the supplemental EIS, should get posted probably early in either end of October or very early in November. And then we'll be out taking public comment on those draft reports, doing some follow-up work then the first part of 2015. Our target is to be finished so the board can take action in the spring of 2015. So we're still on that kind of timeline right now where we'll be wrapped up in the spring of 2015. You've seen this slide before, and I know everybody recognizes it right away because you've been looking at it off and on since our last public meeting. But just in case you hadn't been looking at it, this is our process diagram for how we actually do this work in the IRP. And so I want to spend just a minute kind of refreshing us on how this process works, and then we're going to step through and talk about where we are with some of the details. So we begin up there kind of on the left-hand side of that picture with sort of two parallel exercises, one where we try to imagine plausible alternative futures. We call those scenarios. And those things are defined by a particular set of uncertainties. And those are things over which we have no control, like the price of natural gas or the kind of regulatory scheme that the federal government might impose on us as an electric utility or how much electricity our customers are actually going to use. Those are the kinds of uncertainties that shape these different views of the future. And as you're going to see in a minute as we talked about last time, we have five of those different views of the future that we're going to be using in this particular round of the IRP. At the same time, we're also looking at different business plans that TVIA might want to look at. We call those strategies. So we're looking at different strategies for what we might do with our mix of resources, about what we might do about when to add them, when to retire them, how to kind of adjust our portfolio. So those analyses, those strategies, are defined by another set of variables over which we do have control. Things like, am I going to invest in more energy efficiency? Am I going to scale up what I'm doing in solar? Am I going to back down in nuclear? Those things are all under our control. We call those attributes of the strategy. So we build strategies, kind of building blocks, based on these attributes, and we're going to look at those here in a minute. Once we have those two kind of fundamentals put together, then all we need is the other kind of driving assumptions, and mostly we need our other options for what's the model going to be able to choose from when it tries to solve that puzzle I talked about at the beginning. So we'll give you a chance to look at what our resource menu is right now. Once all of that work begins, then the model is going to produce a series of portfolios. Each one of these is a 20-year resource plan, basically generated by taking each one of those strategies and evaluating them in each of the five alternative futures that we've defined. Then we're going to apply some uncertainty analysis to those results, because we know as planners that we're always wrong, because all our analysis is based on forecasts. So what we want to do is test how wrong we are and how much at risk we are for certain things going wrong in a particular way. So we do our uncertainty analysis around all those things that went into the modeling exercise in order to make sure that we don't have something that where we have a very high risk that we're not aware of. So out of all of that work comes a heck of a lot of data. And then we have to find a way to streamline that data package and communicate it to folks so that our stakeholders and our public can help us decide what the, quote, best plan is. And we're going to talk about that a little later, but that's what we do with our scorecard and our selection of these various metrics that we use to populate that scorecard. Out the back end of all of that stuff, when we're all done, comes a little piece of highway. Okay? At least that's the graphic that we've used that seems to work pretty well with folks. The IRP is going to set a strategic direction. So it is kind of like saying, I'm going to get on the highway and I'm going to go in a particular direction. The IRP won't tell you which lane to drive in. That's a tactical decision that gets made by, in the case of resource planning, it's made by the board on a case-by-case basis using a lot of other information in addition to the work of the IRP. So we are going to set the highway. We're going to set where the boundaries of the highway are, but we're not going to set the lane that we're driving. Okay? So here's a set of scenarios, and we talked about these last time, but I wanted to spend a few minutes on this again just to remind you of what these futures are that the IRP is going to be testing. We have five of them. We have our current outlook. Then we have two futures that deal with the economic growth, one low one, one high one. Then we have a future that looks at more stringent environmental regulations. And we have a future that looks at a major paradigm shift in the way that our business goes, where the customers really began to take sort of more control of their energy future. So we go back and look at this list, and again, the current outlook is the way that we view the future right now. So it uses our current estimates of our load growth, what we think fuel prices will be, all those kinds of things. Then we go into the stagnant economy, where what we've assumed is that we don't get any kind of recovery. And in fact, we might get a little bit of a droop in our economic production, our GDP, and things like that. And so obviously that affects our need for new resources, as well as affecting what kind of new resources we might have. So if that's kind of our low end, if you want to think about it that way, on what we're going to be responsible for, then our high end is going to be the growth scenario. Now, that growth scenario, and I say it's the high end, it's not nearly the kind of growth that we would have seen, say, 5 to 10 years ago. But it is a positive growth. And to kind of give you an idea, our current outlook, for example, our growth rate on energy sales is forecasted to be less than 1%, like 0.9%. So we're just barely growing. So in the, quote, growth case, we're like 1.5%. Okay? So it's not very much growth, but it is some. Then, and so that's going to drive the need for resources of a different kind, maybe sooner, different sorts. And so we've created kind of this envelope now of a low-growth scenario on one side, kind of high growth on the other. The decarbonized future is our attempt to say, let's imagine a world in which there's a very aggressive application of environmental regulations, especially targeted toward greenhouse gases. So what does that do to our environment, obviously, all the utilities then begin to move away from carbon-emitting resources, and again, that changes the way that that our plans kind of unfold. And then the last one is really the distributed marketplace is really our recognition, as I said, kind of at the beginning of the discussion, that the paradigm is changing for the electric utility business. And so this future says, okay, what if the customers really take charge of that and begin to install their own energy supplies and begin to manage their usage either in that way or through aggressive investment in energy efficiency? It changes what we now have to do as an electric utility in terms of not only what kind of load we have to serve, but how that load looks. So we expect both the amount of sales to change in this future, but also the shape of our load in terms of when energy is being used and how it's being used. So we feel like those five futures are going to give us a very nice, robust set of alternative worlds, if you will, that we can then start thinking about how does TVA position itself to be successful in each of those five alternative futures. Now, it's unlikely that one strategy is going to succeed in all five of them. So I'm not saying that we're looking for the one answer. What we are trying to do is figure out what kind of flexibility do we need to build into our plan. And that kind of leads us into strategy development. So this diagram kind of shows you a little bit of an idea about how we do strategy design at TVA. We start out by thinking about our resource mix, what it looks like right now, what it's probably going to need to look like in the future, what things we might want to do about that mix, and then what things people might do to us about that mix. And we think about those things, and out of that brainstorming comes this set of sort of design parameters, or we call them attributes, and these things that, little knobs that we want to be able to turn. So that as we design these strategies, we start thinking about, okay, do I need a strategy that has a lot of nuclear in it, for example? Do I need a strategy that has a lot of efficiency in it? Do I need a strategy that has more gas in it? So I start thinking about what things do I need to adjust that are business strategies that I'm particularly interested in testing. So what I want to know at the end of the day is this strategy positioning me well for the uncertainties that are coming in our marketplace, especially the uncertainties we are uncertain about? So what we want to do is find that strategy that helps us be agile and flexible. And so that's where this design exercise takes us. So we began to think about that. We start trying to put those together in sort of a reasonable way, and I'm going to show you here in a minute what they look like as we've now kind of got our set together. So we come up with these ideas, and then we start shopping these around, both inside TVA as well as with our stakeholder working group, saying, do these strategies make sense to you guys? Is there something that you want us to test that we didn't think of, or is there something that we want to test that you don't think we need to test? And we've actually had both those kinds of conversations with our stakeholders over the last couple of months. Ultimately, where we try and get to is not exactly a consensus, but maybe a meeting of the minds about, you know, what are we going to test in this round of the IRP to help TVA understand how to do a good long-range resource plan. So we take those kind of design guides, and that's what you see sort of on the left of this screen. These are those attributes I've been talking about, things like what do I do with my existing nuclear fleet, what about nuclear additions, do I make them, what about my plans for my existing coal fleet, what do I do about gas expansion, I need some additional energy efficiency and demand response in this portfolio, how do I get it, what about renewables, both utility scale as well as smaller things like that, and then how do I make sure that my transmission infrastructure gets correctly deployed to recognize this changing mix I have of resources as well as the changing futures that I'm going to test. So if I take all those and kind of put them in a big bucket and shake them up, we created about 8 or 9 alternative strategies and we shopped them with our stakeholders. And what happened is after all that discussion, we came out with the 5 that you see on the right-hand side of the slide. We've got a reference plan. We have a plan that's targeted to meeting an emission goal. We have a plan that we're going to lean more on the market and not on our own generation. We're going to do more energy efficiency in that fourth plan, and in the last one, we're going to try focusing our expansion efforts more in renewables. So what I'm going to do is talk you through each of those five now a little bit more. So the reference plan is the one that we would get when we do our, quote, ordinary planning exercise. So in the reference plan, we don't have any special targets or goals that we're trying to achieve other than the one we always have in resource planning, and that is the least cost plan under the conditions that we're currently modeling. So this case actually is the, and you even see it in the definition, it's the traditional least cost utility planning process. We use present value of revenue requirements as our target metric for what cost means. When we say cost, that's what we're talking about. Again, revenue requirements is just a fancy way of saying cost of the customer. So it has all of our capital investment, all our operating expenses, everything rolled up into that. Okay, so strategy B essentially is the same thing as strategy A, except we tell the model that I want you to find the least cost plan, but you have to meet a specific emission target as a system. So what we're trying to test here is if we were to impose an emission limit on our resource planning exercise, how different would that plan look than the plan we get in strategy A where we don't have that extra constraint? So this is an additional constraint. So what the model is going to do in this strategy is find the least cost plan that also meets that emission goal. Now, where we are with that goal right now is we've set a target that's about 80% of our emissions in a historical year. We've been working that target out with our stakeholders so that they get comfortable with what that is. But essentially what we're trying to do is ratchet down our emission levels and then see what that does to our resource plan. One of the sort of unique things that we're doing in that plan, and I should have said our target, you can see it on the screen, we're using CO2 as the proxy for this broad sort of emission target thing. We're going to let CO2 be the actual target variable. And one of the things that the model will be able to do in this strategy is obviously when you're trying to meet something like that, the model's going to be able to retire additional coal plants that we've not already identified as being part of that coal that we're going to reduce already. So the model will be able to go in and make that economic choice if that's the least cost plan in that strategy. Okay. C is lean on the market. This is really about trying to reduce the amount of capital investment that TVA would make going forward in its resource portfolio. So what we intend to do here is our normal planning process always includes a certain amount of market power that we can choose from if it is economic compared to building and operating our own resources. So what's going to happen in strategy C is we're just going to open that up a little more and let the model pick even more of that and therefore less of what we might build and invest in. And again, this is us testing this question about should we be investing in generating assets. So we're going to try and find out if I set a strategy where I'm trying not to, what does that plan kind of look like? And again, how does that compare to what we would get in strategy A? You're getting the message, I guess, about why A is called the reference plan, right? Because we're comparing a bunch of stuff back to that one. Okay, in D, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to say, all right, let's go ahead and look at energy efficiency in a more significant way. So what E will do is require a certain amount of minimum energy efficiency to be part of the portfolio. And the model will be able to pick as much as it wants to that's economic, and it'll do that in all these other strategies too. But in D, it's going to have at least this amount. And so what we've set as a minimum floor here is 1% of sales. and we're going to tell the model, you've got to get there. You can get more if you want to. Now, what we talked about in our working group is if one of these other strategies ends up picking 1% of sales, then we're going to bump this threshold up so that we continue to get the information that we want out of this strategy, which is what happens to my plan when I have a requirement like that, a minimum requirement for a certain type of resource. And in this case, it just happens to be energy efficiency. Then the last strategy does kind of that same thing, but does it with renewables now. So again, what we're trying to find out is if I require a certain amount of renewables in my portfolio, sort of like self-imposing a renewable portfolio standard. So I'm going to set a floor, and the model's going to have to get at least that much, and it will take anything more than that that's economic. Because the low-cost target is still going to happen in all five of these. It's just going to happen in a different way. It's going to happen subject to these other constraints, either an emission constraint, a certain amount of energy efficiency, a certain amount of renewables. So now those five strategies set kind of the size of the box, if you will, inside which we're going to find the 20-year resource plan under each of those five alternative views of the future, and then subject to all that uncertainty I talked about where we draw randomly these variables on loads and fuels and things like that. So these strategies don't specify a resource plan. They just create a space, a box, if you will, inside which the model is going to hunt for the best answer. So if you think about this, think about these as five different boxes that have different sizes. The sides are taller or shorter, but the answer that's inside there, we don't know what the answer is yet until the model has done all of its analytics, both using our basic assumptions as well as our all of our variables that have uncertainty built into it. And the way it's going to get that answer is using this menu of options, okay? So it's going to take this menu of alternative resources that it can choose from and try to solve that puzzle, remember that energy puzzle from the beginning of the discussion, in each of these different scenarios, and it's going to look at all these different strategies. Now, I'm not going to talk through all of those, but you can see generally what we've got is we've got a set of gas-fired generation alternatives, both simple cycle as well as combined cycle alternatives. Yes, we do have several coal-fired options also that the model can choose from, both advanced technology as well as fairly standard technology, and you'll notice in that list we have with and without carbon capture and storage. We have some nuclear options. We have options around the hydro system, actually, that came from some of the work of one of our specialized stakeholder groups that gave us some really good ideas about renewables. They're also the ones that helped us with the biomass and the solar options. We have some utility-scale storage options that the model will be able to look for, pump hydro and compressed air. And then we've also got wind resources that also that same Tennessee Valley Renewable Information Exchange, that little working group helped us with those too. In addition to that list, we've also got energy efficiency options. And we're still framing up those options, so that's why they don't show up on the slide, because we don't have them enumerated yet. But we are looking at modeling energy efficiency, I think we talked about this before, as a resource. So we have little small blocks of EE, basically. The model will be able to pick those blocks and put them together to form sort of an energy efficiency portfolio. So for each one of those options you saw on that prior slide, we have to collect a lot of data. This is kind of a sort of a proxy of the data template. And again, just to give you an idea of the kind of data that we have to have on all these options. So we have basically sort of two big categories of data. We've got unit characteristics, and then we've got these cost characteristics. And for unit characteristics, we have kind of the standard things, how much capacity is this resource going to offer me? What about its heat rate if it is a thermal resource? In other words, how efficiently does it convert fuel into electricity? How available is it, and what about its outage rate? You know, is it prone to be out, or is it prone to be online? And then in the cost characteristics, we look at capital costs. So we look at three or four kinds of capital costs there. You see we've got what's called overnight capital costs. We have costs including our fund allowances for construction. We have transmission costs, because all of these new resources have to be integrated to the grid somehow, so we need to put cost in there for what that is going to require. Our variable costs, these are the things that it requires, that are required to operate the resources. Everything that depends on the dispatch of the unit, that is how much energy it's going to make, except for fuel, because fuel we carry separately. And then book life is another piece of data that we take in, because it's important to the way we calculate the debt service on the investment we make in those resources. So now if you look at that template, there are two or three of those variables, along with all the other ones that I talked about, that are subject to uncertainty analysis, especially things like capital costs, the fuel costs, some of the O&M costs. So what we'll do is the model is going to test the it's going to find solutions that are least cost based on, first, our best estimate of what all these costs are, and then it will try again when we draw another set of those costs that recognize that we're not really sure we know what it costs to build a gas-fired plant in 2025, for example. So we need to have some uncertainty around that cost, and so the model knows what that is. You guys have heard me before, I make the model sound like a person. So the model knows what that is, and it'll recalculate, okay, does my plan change if my capital cost is like 15% higher than I thought it was going to be? That's the kind of uncertainty that we test. All right, so once we get all those runs done, we sometimes feel like this guy down here with all this paper stacked up. What we have is we don't have a problem with data. We got a gracious plenty of data. What we got a problem with is what do we do with all that data? How do we cull it down? How do we filter it and translate it into something that makes sense? Because at the end of the day, what we're trying to figure out is we want to look for the preferred resource plan. There's just one problem with that, of course, and that is what does preferred mean? And who gets to decide what preferred is? Because everybody has kind of a different view of what a good resource plan is versus a not-so-good resource plan. So our position at TVA is the way we sort this out is first with a good set of metrics, and then secondly with a scorecard that allows us to communicate. So what you're looking at right here is kind of the way we are going to organize our metrics for the 2015 study. Because we do this scenario analysis structure, we're going to generate a lot of data across multiple views of the future. We need to find a way to communicate what is important to us and our stakeholders about the outcome in each one of those alternative futures for each one of the five strategies that we're going to test. Just to give you an idea about how many plans we'll be looking at, if you include our uncertainty analysis, we're probably looking at somewhere between 1,800 and 2,000 20-year resource plans. So a lot of data, a lot of different options to look at. So what we decided to do is organize all that data around five big categories. And these are categories that not only make sense to us, obviously, at TVA, but also are things that our stakeholders and customers in various surveys and other things have told us are important to them. So if you look at this slide on the right, what you see is these five categories: cost, financial risk, environmental stewardship, valley economics, and flexibility. And so what I want to do is talk to you about each one of those five so you get an idea about what we're talking about. So the cost category is what it sounds like. It's the cost of the plan. But there's two kinds of costs that we want to evaluate. One of those is the long-range cost of this plan. So remember I said these are 20-year plans. So we're going to calculate what the total cost of that plan is over 20 years and then express that as a discounted revenue requirement number. So that's one criteria, and it's a fairly common criteria in the utility industry. in addition to that, we want to get some sense about possible rate pressures and things like that that might be exacerbated by one strategy versus another. So a second component of our cost metrics is going to be this shorter term look at what we call system average cost, which again is sort of the calculation. If I take all the costs and I divide them by all of the energy that's produced, I get kind of a rate, a dollar per megawatt hour number. That number is a system average cost, and it can give us a signal about whether we're going to have rate pressures or not when we go from strategy to strategy. So in the cost category, we've got those two things. In financial risk, we're looking at what is the risk that our cost is going to be wrong so that we will have picked a plan that we thought was least cost and it turned out not to be. So we're going to look at a couple of different ways to view that risk, and both of these methods are based on that uncertainty analysis I talked about before, where we're going to do multiple draws, if you will, of our analysis on multiple views of our cost, and we're going to produce a probability distribution of cost. So then what we want to do is look at that distribution to get some idea about how risky that plan is. So we're going to calculate a couple of metrics. One of them is kind of a risk-benefit ratio, where we're going to look at, you know, what's the probability, basically, that my costs are going to be lower than I think, divided by the probability that the costs are going to be higher than I think they are. So we're looking at a ratio there. And then the other thing we'll probably look at is some things around what is my risk exposure. If I look at the upper end of this probability distribution on cost and look at how big that, as we call it, the upper tail of that distribution is, that gives me some idea about maybe how much absolute risk I have around plan cost. And that's one of the things we want to get a good handle on. And again, those two metrics right there, that cost category and the financial risk category, are categories we use in the 2011 model. As well as this next one, environmental stewardship. Here we're trying to look at various aspects that help us capture our stewardship mission. So we're looking at both air emissions as well as water kind of impacts. And now what we're probably going to use this time is a similar metric that we used last time around thermal loading on the river system as an example. We'll probably also calculate some other solid waste kind of metrics as well. So we're looking at various ways to capture our environmental footprint kind of through a variety of metrics kind of in that category. Valley economics is really about the macroeconomic impact of our resource plans on the area here that we serve in the Tennessee Valley. It's different than cost. What we do is we're trying to look at, does one resource plan make economic development more or less attractive? So we're looking for a way to kind of differentiate, am I going to be able to better attract and retain businesses in one situation or another? So we're using a specialized tool called REMI that calculates these things around per capita income and employment and the migration of people in and out of our service territory. And so this tool is going to help us calculate a change in per capita income for each of the strategies that we're going to test, and we're going to compare that to the per capita income in our reference plan, and so we'll get a delta, and that'll tell us whether which plans maybe help us better encourage development in the valley. So again, it's a way to kind of get at our economic development mission. And then the last category there on flexibility, we know that part of the challenge that we'll have as we go forward, especially in resource plans that have large amounts of nuclear or solar or wind, that those kind of resources are hard to manage. They aren't very dispatchable. They sort of kind of happen when they want to. And what that does is that complicates the life of our dispatchers. And so what we're trying to do is in this metric, and this is kind of a new one that we've added this year based on some of the research that EPRI and other groups are doing right now, trying to look at this issue around flexibility. So we're developing a metric to help us figure out how much of our portfolio is maybe not non-dispatchable, but it's difficult to dispatch, difficult to shape and move around, as a way to kind of get an idea about, am I creating a resource portfolio that's inflexible, that can't respond to changes in customer demand and things like that. So we're working on this. This is probably the cutting edge group of our metrics because we've not done one of those like this before. So we're going to see if we can learn something in flexibility that will help us as we go forward. So just to give you an idea, we've been doing some benchmarking all through the IRP against this set of utilities, and you can kind of see them in the bottom here, in the bottom left-hand corner there's the key. So we have about eight benchmark utilities that we've been looking at, and we've been looking at these eight utilities, their IRP reports and their other public filings and things, trying to see what they are doing about resource planning, and sort of then comparing that against where we are and saying, okay, are we out of line with the industry or are we kind of going in the same direction? And what you see in this table is that there's basically three big sort of buckets of metrics that this particular sample of our peers is looking at. They're looking at cost metrics, revenue requirements, financial measures. They're looking at risk measures, and they're looking at environmental impact kind of measures. And so it's very consistent with the kind of metrics and scorecard design that we are contemplating. Now, you'll notice that most of the utilities in this sample don't have too many individual metrics. So we're probably on the high side in terms of the number of individual metrics that we intend to put in our scorecard, with probably the exception there of Georgia Power's got quite a few, and out west, Pacific Corp has several too. Generally, this peer group focuses on one or two things, financial issues around cost and risk. And when they look at environmental issues, mostly it's around compliance issues, of course. They've got kind of a different framework to work in. Most of these folks in this sample are investor-owned utilities, so they have a regulatory structure that's different than ours. But the kind of the message on that slide is that we are pretty consistent with what they're doing. If anything, maybe we've got a couple of metrics categories more than what a lot of these folks are. So you've got to take all those metrics and put them somewhere. And the somewhere you put them is in the scorecard. And so that's really where the active work in the IRP is right now, is we're trying to design a very effective scorecard that helps us communicate all of this information to our customers. And I want you to think about a good scorecard is kind of like the scoreboard in football. So you can look at that picture of the scoreboard. You don't have to have been at the game to know what the situation is. The Tigers are in trouble. Right? Because it's late in the game. All right, they got the ball, but they're down by two touchdowns. All right, so they got a lot of work ahead of them. You don't have to know much about how the game went to know where we stand right now. Okay? That's what a good scorecard should do for us when we get to that point in the IRP. Our stakeholders shouldn't have to be resource planners. They ought to be able to look at the scorecard and go, oh, I get it. Now I like this plan, and I don't like this one, and I know why. So that's kind of where we're headed right now in scorecard design, is I want to be able to communicate something that allows everybody to participate in the debate, because that's actually what it's going to be, right? It's a debate about what do I trade off. I like this plan, you like that one because one has less of an environmental footprint, one is maybe a little more expensive, I'm willing to make that trade off, and there's where the discussion starts. That's what helps us get to a better long-range resource planning strategy. It worked very well for us in the 2011 IRP, positioned TVA, I think, very well. So we are expecting the same kind of good outcome from our scorecard design this time. So now, it's not going to look like a scoreboard, okay, but it's going to work like a scoreboard. Okay, so that brings us to next steps. So where are we? All right, like I said, we're about ready to button up our issues around the framework. We're getting ready to push the big red button and start all that modeling work. And we'll be pretty busy doing that through the bulk of the summer. As we get into the fall, then we'll start having these preliminary results, and our stakeholders will begin to look at those. We'll start putting them in that report that I talked about so that we can get that out on the street so that the entire public now gets a chance to weigh in and say what they think. So it's those next kind of three chevrons that we're really focused on right now, trying to get us to the fall kind of when we can present these draft results and then start, as I think I may have mentioned last time, we'll be going around the valley holding some public meetings and allowing people to come and talk to us about the outcome. All right.
All right. Thank you, Gary. All right. Are there any questions in the audience? If not, we've got some online that I'm happy to share. And if I could ask that those with questions would come up at the podium and give us your name and speak into the mic there so that the people online can hear your questions. Thank you.
The planning, the integrated plan looks great from a macro approach. However, the economics in the valley are vast and different in each different region. And the issue is, how do you factor in the variations amongst distributors in terms of how you focus your mission statement and some of these variables? For example, you might have an area that just can't afford, let's say, a new expensive installation that would raise the rates. Or it may be that cooling towers might generate a air disturbance over a certain region. We don't know these things. And the question is, how do you factor that into your planning?
Good. That's a great question. The IRP is just the start of TVA's planning process. The IRP is a really broad, strategic kind of thing, as I said before. It's kind of like just pointing us on the highway a little bit. TVA does a lot of annual planning and specific project analysis that gets down to some of those issues, Stephen, that you're raising right there about specific locations for resources and what the environment and the siting constraints might be and what maybe the local or regional economics are. So it is a stepwise exercise. The IRP is not going to answer all of those questions because that's not its mission. Its mission is to get us a broad signal of what we think is the right direction for TVA to go. And then we collaborate with our local power companies as well as in our subsequent annual planning cycles to get down to the details you're talking about.
Gary, will first modeling runs be available to stakeholders?
Kind of. initial modeling runs are going to get reviewed with our stakeholder working group. Yes, they will ultimately appear in the draft report. The working group is going to get an early look at them, of course, probably in the August timeframe somewhere. But we haven't decided what format they'll take. But yes, they're going to end up ultimately in that report that goes out in the fall.
And we will be discussing some of the results in the upcoming quarterly public meeting in September.
Right, that's right.
That will be the major focus of that meeting.
Yeah, so good point.
You have a long-term PPA with the Red Hills coal-fired power plant near Ackerman, Mississippi. How does this contract and power plant fit into your IRP since it may be, or probably will be, one of the lowest cost per kilowatt hour after hydro and nuclear?
Okay, well, I don't know about the cost issue. I'd have to actually go back and look at that. So setting aside that for a minute, the way it fits in is it's part of our existing portfolio right now, and so it continues to be in the portfolio. It'll continue to contribute until the end of that contract term.
Any other questions from the audience here? Okay, let me go forward. Will a video be available, such as on YouTube, for TVA customers? I'm thinking that are we going to be streaming and maybe some of our final meetings that we can watch maybe our public meetings.
It's possible. I think we're talking about how to make those public meetings when we have a draft report and we start going around the valley. We're trying to find ways to make that meeting more accessible to more of our customers. So maybe we will stream. We'll just have to see.
We are planning at a minimum to present the results as a webinar.
Right.
With question and answer, as well as we're still, we don't have all the locations or the exact number of public meetings figured out yet, but we're working on that. We plan on having several public meetings scattered across the valley come November, early December.
Are these
slides
available? Will they be available on
the web? Yes. The presentation will be posted within the next 24 to 48 hours. The audio, we're trying to improve our time frame, and so I'll get that up as quickly as I can. Will TVA be modifying terms of generation contracts to accommodate flexibility and agility?
We probably won't change terms of any of our existing contracts, like that prior question about Red Hills. That contract term and the characteristics of that contract are whatever they are, and they'll be modeled consistent with the contract. Now, going forward, as we begin to look at new opportunities for purchase power agreements, then those will be structured with the appropriate kind of flexibility. Our group that does that will be getting those details to us so that we can model it correctly. So.
Yes.
First of all, thank you for explaining that. Sure. The marathon explanation. my question, I'm Angela Groney from the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and I just had a question about the current outlook versus the decarbonized future. Because I think, as I understand it, is the current outlook include the new 111D regulations will do, or is that captured in the decarbonized? Then I guess the second question would be, how intense is that decarbonized regulation?
Great question. No, 111D is in neither one of those, okay, because we were well on our way to IRP design before 111D hatched out of the EPA. So we're not doing 111D analysis in the IRP right now. But the difference is, we think, is fairly extreme between the current outlook and the constraints that we're going to put in the decarbonized future, primarily around the pricing of CO2. And in the decarbonized future, we're actually looking at using essentially the social cost of carbon kind of number, something really high in that future, because, again, it's intended to stress our decision-making and say, what if carbon is really, 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 really expensive? How does that change my planning?
This is quite similar. Has TVA considered putting its IRP process on hold pending the outcome of 111D rulemaking?
We considered it, but realizing how uncertain that rule is in terms of its process and what's going to happen, and then there's going to be litigation, then there's going to be more litigation, and we needed to go ahead and move forward in the IRP. Plus, we think that the broad range of scenarios we're looking at will help inform our 111D planning, if you will, as we go ahead. So we actually think there's good logic for why we should proceed now, because we think it'll help us down the road.
A lot of companies have withdrawn or scaled back their SMR programs, and this includes TVA's Choice M-Power. How is that factored into the IRP process and strategy?
We are still including an SMR option in the basket of things that the model can choose from. We're using the best information we've got right now, which is still a little uncertain, as this question points out, because there's a lot of changing market dynamics, let's call them, right there in the SMR area. So We are going to continue to leave it in the mix right now. We don't know, of course, whether it'll get chosen or not. It depends on a lot of the other factors in the plan. If it does get chosen, then that's one of those things we'd have to look really hard at.
Anybody else here? Yes, sir.
This gentleman knows my name. This is Steve Levy. I have a question with respect to distributed and of resources, for example, rooftop solar. And as people buy more and more electric cars, and they seem to be doing that, there has to be some a change in the plan to accommodate the fact that amongst the distributors, they will be under TVA's guidance as far as solar on the rooftop. And I'm just wondering if TVA is considering allowing the distributors to have their own solar programs for rooftop solar. And if not, would TVA be willing to consider a 15 kilowatt level limit on rooftop solar and provide a 7-cent feed-in tariff to encourage the establishment of solar within the region so that the distributed solar resource, which is variable, can be accommodated within the system?
Interesting idea. Let me see if I can do a piece of that, and then Joe may want to tag on. The IRP doesn't look at granular level of detail on the customer side of the meter. So when we test distributed resource options, what we're looking at is fundamentally when we stand kind of on our side of the system and look that way, what we see is a change of load shape and a change of load magnitude. We don't necessarily, in the IRP, we don't necessarily need to know even who owns it and where it's located. We just know what it has. It has an impact, a macro level impact on our load shape and load and magnitude of demand. So when we do distributed analysis in the IRP, we do it from that perspective. We don't get down in the details of saying, I've got rooftop solar on these houses in Nashville and these houses in Knoxville. I don't do it at that level. What I do is make an assumption about how much rooftop solar there might be and what the shape of that is going to look like. So the IRP is looking at it at a higher level, trying to see how does that change of shape affect us. And then, of course, the IRP never captures any of the distributor costs anyway. So that's a whole separate sort of analysis where we involve our local power companies, because distributed generation is mostly impactful for them because it's on their feeders in their service territory.
I think so. You know, we already have a number of programs available that incentivizes the rooftop solar. I think folks familiar with that know that there's some advantages in the sense that the incentives have been pretty good, but at the same time we've had a cap based on budgets. But we recently started up a project to really look at the value of solar in the valley and make sure that we're accounting for the value that that solar brings onto the grid, as well as the value that the grid provides back to the solar users. And that's a stakeholder group that we've convened in it and are working through with the intent to actually come up with the value number that a fair transaction could occur, and we hope to have that by the end of this calendar year. And then that information will be used to help us refine and design the programs, which as they're currently laid out are basically sunset at the end of 2015.
What is the baseline reference year for the renewables, including hydro, being reduced 20% by 2020?
Okay, I think maybe we're confused. That's increased, not reduced. In the strategy, in the focusing on renewable strategy, we're actually increasing the contribution of renewables, including hydro. And those targets, 20% by 2020, and I believe it's 35% by the end of our study window, those are percents of total energy generated on the system. And hydro, we count hydro in that number. So we're going to count hydro as a renewable, even though it may not qualify under some other programs to be a, quote, renewable.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Let's see. This one? Are the cost of waste disposal and storage figured into the total cost of each generation source?
Yes, to the best that we can. They also get discussed a little bit. Chuck's going to make sure they get discussed a little bit in the EIS as well. So.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I notice that when you talk about stewardship and the environmental footprint of various resource plans, the examples you gave were air emissions and thermal loading. And I want to encourage you to include the cost of the fuel, whatever you pick, for example, fracking or coal mining. I consider that TVA's responsibility, even though you are not actually digging out the coal or fracking the gas. That is something that should be considered. I'm Sandra Goss with Tennessee Citizens for Wilderness Planning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
As an energy wholesaler, does EE or TVA include improvements of operating efficiencies of existing power plants?
Yes.
All right. Strategies D, which is more energy efficiency, and E, which is more renewables, would seem to work better together than separately. Why are they separated, and will the synergies between them be considered?
Yes.
No. Gary, come on.
First of all, both renewables and energy efficiency play in all five of these strategies, and they play at different levels in all five. In two of them, what we're trying to do is emphasize one of them, but not we're not excluding the other one. So in strategy D, where we are focusing on EE, what we've done is set a minimum for EE, but we're not excluding renewables. So they will still play as the model chooses the least cost plan. Similarly, in the other strategy that's focused on renewables, renewables has a minimum amount. Energy efficiency will still play based on cost. So, yes, the synergies are going to be in there. It's just we're trying to push one part or the other of that little combination across those two strategies.
Okay. Any other questions here in the audience? All right, I have a final question from online. At what point in the IRP process, which, by the way, seems robust with high integrity, will generation suppliers have a range of PPA prices that the model assumes? For example, some generation resources take years of planning and deployment.
Oh, okay. I think I understand this question. It's not our intent for the IRP to create bidding targets that power developers might be able to look at. The IRP's intent is to represent reasonable market costs of power as an alternative to other resources so that we can make a choice between building versus buying versus using efficiency. Once we get a sense of where that mix is and we begin to go forward with our annual planning cycles, that's the point at which RFPs might be issued for bids and things like that, and those prices in those bid documents may be based on the IRP, and they may be modified from that for other market conditions, but the IRP does not create that bid target.
Okay. Any other questions from the audience? All right. It looks like we're wrapping it up. We want to thank everyone for coming and those attending online. Please have a safe drive home, and we'll be in touch in September. Thank you.
Thank you.
35.